Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, Carlene, what beauty products are on your holiday wish list?
Stickers.
Stickers? What do you mean?
This season, Smashbox collaborated with the illustrator Anna Strumpf, so all their holiday kits come with adorable, playfully sketched stickers you can use to decorate your face.
I think you mean to decorate your makeup palettes?
That's what I meant. My new multi-brush set is the prettiest gift I'm giving to myself this year. With its 5 makeup brushes, I can create any look I like. How about you?
I'm stocking up on the Smashbox Lash and Liner set. You know I love a good cat eye, and with its full exposure mascara, always on gel liner pencil, which I adore, and the photo finish lash primer, my lashes will be photo ready all holiday long.
Available exclusively at Shoppers Drug Mart and beautyboutique.ca.
Cool. Now let's send Santa a selfie. Hey guys, welcome to Breaking Beauty,
the podcast all about the best-selling beauty products and the damn good stories behind them. We're your hosts, Carlene Higgins
and Jill Dunn. Okay, guys. Well, welcome back to Breaking Beauty. Today we're in the studio. We're actually sitting around a chair. It's very glamorous with two microphones. And we have the lovely beauty team from Fashion Magazine here. We have Lisa Hanna, the beauty director,
and beauty editor Susie Michael.
And we
Hi, ladies. Welcome.
So today we wanted to do like a recap of the top 7 beauty moments of 2017. Mm-hmm. And who better to do that than the ladies from Fashion? So you guys just wrote a story literally this week today about your top moments or top product launches of 2017. So maybe we can start there with like the thing that really stood out to you.
So on fashionmagazine.com for the next basically 10 days leading up to the holidays, we're going to be publishing a bunch of just end of year roundups. Our first one came out this morning, and it was, as you mentioned, our favorite product launches. So we talked about stuff like the Way Dry Shampoo by Jen Atkin, Glossier coming to Canada, Fenty Beauty and KKW Beauty, stuff like that.
Lisa, what was your favorite on the list?
Yeah, I was going to say that these weren't like my personal favorites. I mostly picked them as like they stood out to me as big moments in beauty.
Yeah.
But I would say Tom Ford naming a fragrance fucking fabulous is kind of fucking awesome, because as we all know, fragrance can often really takes itself so seriously. Uh-huh. The press kits are just absurd and ridiculous, and there's always a battle for like a name that's not already taken, and so I just kind of love that he was like, it's fucking fabulous, let's just call it that. And they like literally put it into production, and it's just I love that he just did that, and I also think it's kind of poking fun at almost the absurdity of fragrance, because people actually serious?
Yeah, like when SNL did the Ivanka Trump complicit, it's kind of like that.
Yes.
He's like taking a piss.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of also what I love about it, is it's kind of taking the piss out of the fragrance industry, because it's so like got its head so far up its own bum sometimes.
Well, what did it smell like?
Well, that was the thing. So anytime I got it and people would sit on my desk and be like, oh my God, what does it smell like? Because of course, everyone's going to want to know, which I think was also brilliant too. Like if you're going to call it that.
Yeah.
But I have to be honest, it's not as fucking fabulous as some of his other stuff.
Oh.
There's a quite leathery note to it.
Yeah. What's your,
but it has a lot of hype to live up to, I think, when you call it that too, so.
Is it sort of like unisex in feeling?
Yeah, I would say so. Definitely unisex. It's nice, but it's meh. Like, I don't know. I just kind of, you expect so much from a name like that.
Is it available in Canada, just as a side note?
Yes, it did. It originally was U.S. and Asia, I think, only. Okay. And then a few weeks later, it came to Holt Renfrew.
Oh, so okay. Okay, so I'm going to go sniff it myself this holiday season.
The biggest feel-good moment, beauty moment of the year.
Okay, so mine was Glossier's Body Hero campaign.
Agreed.
It was the brand's first foray into a body product. And so, as you guys know, you are both at the Toronto pop-up. It's a body lotion and a shower gel, and they just used really cool people
shower
in there. and they used, so, a basketball player and Olympic gold medalist, an influencer and clinical research coordinator, the founder of Outdoor Voices, and who else? And then Paloma Elsesser and a creative director.
Very real peeps.
Yes, real. So not models. They're not all sample size. And a lot of the models posted the campaigns on their Instagram, and they just wrote these really like touching blurbs about their issues with self-esteem in the past and even eating disorders, and they were really like gut-wrenching, really heartwarming posts that stuck with me. It evokes an emotion, and I think that a lot of beauty products fail to do that.
So it is like an oil gel or whatnot, but my problem is that it makes the shower so slippery. I'm like, my poor kids. I'm like, be careful, guys. I just had a shower in here.
I've never
don't
noticed that.
Break your neck. Like, also, how do people do it? Just like logistically. God.
The scent also really lingers. Yes. I find like even hours after I've had the shower, my bathroom still smells like it.
Emily said at the pop up, if you guys remember, she wanted them to smell like a French baby.
Yeah.
Which is not my, like, aesthetic.
any feel-good moments from you, Lisa?
I don't know about, like, I felt gooey inside, but I definitely liked seeing Helen Mirren on the cover of Allure, just because you never see a woman that age on the cover, and it was part of kicking off their whole thing of banning the word anti-aging, which I think is awesome, a great stance from a magazine to take who is so reliant on advertisers who are peddling that kind of stuff. So I thought the whole thing, I thought it was just a very powerful moment.
Yeah.
For the beauty industry.
I've been following the site since so closely to see, because in my mind I was just like, okay, I kind of get it, but does that then mean that you're not going to be talking, like to your point, you're not going to be talking about wrinkle products that fight using that word wrinkles, or like you're not going to talk about Botox anymore? Like, does that mean you're also not going to touch those topics, or you're just going to phrase them in a different way?
I think they're just going to frame it, because their next issue that just came out is the eye issue, and I was looking at some of it last night. They're still addressing it, it's just the language has changed. And actually one sidebar was so interesting. It was like things that they've said in the past. They went back as far as 2003 about things that they'd said about crow's feet in the past, and they were apologizing for it, which was kind of crazy, because I was like, that was all under Linda Wells's time, and she would have approved all that, and they were just basically being like, they would like have some comment after like, oh God, how could we, and like, sorry. And it was just so interesting to read. Like,
that's
they
like the
were
whole
basically
industry, though. Like, that's not just about one editor. I mean,
yeah,
that's
for
about
sure.
Every editor everywhere, that was just the jargon.
And but and the new issue with the eye one that you're talking about, I haven't got my hands on it yet, but it has the crow's feet is on the cover, so they are addressing it, but maybe if it's more like a maintenance thing or just like they're rephrasing
it. That's what I'm confused about. It's just like, so how do you position talking about this wrinkle cream if the idea is that we are embracing all
of this? They interviewed derms and cosmetic surgeons, I think, and they all their quotes were more about like embracing them and coming to terms with them, and then when people come in wanting to address them, how do they assess whether how much to do it? It was a very different perspective on them rather than before, which was just like, how can we minimize them? How can we correct them? They're inevitable. They're something to be celebrated, and if you want, and definitely we should keep them moisturized. So here's what to do.
What are we on to now?
hot button moments.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah. All right. Craziest He's hot first. Button moments. Not going first. That's all I'm saying.
We should have flipped a coin.
Yeah.
So mine was the one, I guess, that left a really bad taste in my mouth, was Kim Kardashian defending Jeffree Star, and just kind of on Snapchat and Instagram stories telling her viewers, her fans, to forgive him for his past racist remarks and racial slurs and just general online bullying. She apologized a day later because she got a ton of backlash, and rightfully so. It just kind of, I'm a Kim K fan normally, but watching that, I remember watching it on my bed before I left for work that morning, and my boyfriend came in because I was just sitting there like, oh no, oh no, oh no, stop talking, stop talking. Like, I just could not believe what a simplistic approach she took to a very complex topic, and it's a topic in which I don't think her opinion was needed. It wasn't necessary. Like, she, it was really belittling, I think, to people who may have been offended in the past by something that Jeffree Star said, and she really spoke for all of those people, and she shouldn't have. So while she did apologize, I think she really didn't think it through. Like, she was just saying, I'm a positive person and I think that we should forgive people, and it's like, that's not really how forgiveness works. Like, you don't just kind of like throw things away and just keep, I don't know. I was really disappointed.
Okay, so give us a brief backstory on some of these controversial comments.
Like, just over the years, countless times, there's videos, there's tweets. He just engages, I guess, in online bullying that often takes the form of racial slurs and stuff that
not okay.
Should not be supported.
Yeah.
No.
Wow. Especially by someone with such a huge platform. Yeah, it was kind of a mess. Like, there's a lot of damage control. And people have, from what it seems, have mostly forgotten about it. Mm-hmm. I have not. Just very, very bizarre.
Maybe this is a good time to get into our next topic, which is the most important beauty inclusivity moment of the year. Because, you know, hopefully we have examples of that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely have a lot of examples of that in 2017, which is great. So the first one that comes to mind, obviously, is Fenty Beauty and the 4D foundation shades. Fenty's not the first brand to come out with a huge, diverse range of foundation shades. But it still is worth noting.
But it still seemed to be, like, this big moment, though. Like, suddenly it was like, oh, the people, there's a market for these dark shades.
Right.
It was, I was so struck by how people acted like it was, like, news to them.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because it was Rihanna doing it or something.
I think a lot of it was that people were saying her undertones were maybe a bit more sophisticated and diverse than a lot of brands.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just, here are our, like, five dark shades. It was
more nuanced, maybe?
Or? Yeah, it was, they're really great, like, subtle differences in the undertones. So I was actually at the launch party for Fenty in New York in September, and they had this foundation station, and you go in and you kind of get looked at under a light because it was a party, it's very dark. And they really assessed your undertones and brought you over to the section where your foundation might be, and you worked with the makeup artist who was there to find the perfect one for you. So the undertones are what stood out to me.
The campaign, for sure, like, seeing there were a
Ducky
lot of
and,
different...
Slick Woods.
You know, I think there was something a little bit more genuine feeling about this launch.
Yeah.
And I also really liked how you could go into the store to Sephora, where I went and I bought my foundation, and you could see the whole range right there in front of you. It wasn't like, these 12 are in store, and then if you're these other tones, go order it on the internet,
because
they don't sell in the store. We're not keeping stock.
Yes.
It was, like, incredible to see, like, the breadth of selection, and
well, on the contrary, like, all the dark shades were the ones that sold out first.
It's amazing.
It's amazing to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any other inclusivity moments that were special for either of you?
I thought it was pretty cool when CoverGirl announced May Musk. I know that signing an older woman isn't... I was just going to say it was a mass brand hasn't, but L'Oreal has Helen Mirren. Because I know some of the more prestige brands were doing it with, like, NARS and Marc Jacobs Beauty. But it's just nice to see now the mass brands doing it too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like CoverGirl is really changing a lot. I feel like just seeing more silver-haired ladies getting campaigns is always mm-hmm. awesome to see.
Moving over to the celebrity side, what was your ultimate goals, red carpet or runway beauty moment?
Okay, well, I'm just going to keep talking about old ladies because that's who I'm here for in the corner.
Me too.
But, Isabel Huppert, I'd forgotten until I looked back into my Twitter, but I remember her at the Oscars. She looked incredible, and she's 63. Her hair, her makeup, her dress, everything. She looked amazing.
What movie was she in again?
It was called, I can't remember. It's the one where she, like, falls for her rapist.
Mm. Whoa.
Yeah, she's French, right?
It's French. She just looked incredible. Like
this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There, when they showed her up close, I just thought, wow, she looks amazing.
She does. So she's kind of doing a bit of that like 40s wave and a nice like dark ruby.
She just didn't look dowdy or mother of the bride-ish.
She's doing the earring that goes the crawler.
Yes, and that was the other thing. I love that she had a crawler. It was just so cool on her.
Yeah, love it.
What about you, Susie?
I actually had a hard time thinking of a red carpet one because I feel like in the age of Instagram, like, no one makes their new, like, look debut mm-hmm. on red carpets mm-hmm. anymore. However, Selena Gomez last month at the American Music Awards, that was the show, right, that it was at, she debuted her blonde hair.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was fun because, like I said, I haven't seen, like, a shocking new red carpet look mm-hmm. in a long time.
Right.
It looks great on her. Going blonde is a funny thing. Actually, one of our writers, my friend Anne T. Donahue, she wrote a story after that appearance about why we turn to bleached hair in times of chaos and, like, uncertainty. It's on fashionmagazine.com. Highly encourage everyone to read it. But I just think it's interesting. I like when people unexpectedly go bleach blonde.
Right.
I think it's very exciting.
I have done it myself. I recommend it to everyone, especially if you've been laid off.
And then
bleach that hair, bitch. Bleach that hair.
Well, that's the thing.
Life-changing moment.
Yeah, when it comes after a breakup. Like, you know that meme that's like, if a girl, like, dyes her hair after a breakup, you're, like, never getting back together or something. And so it was just very, like, it was so, like, normie of her to break up with the Weeknd, dye her hair. And get back together with her ex-boyfriend. Like, haven't we all?
My runway beauty moment, without fail, and it's not even, well, it's beauty, but also just fashion in general, was the Versace show.
Oh, yes.
When it was all the supers came out with Donatella, and it was just, like, gave me goosebumps, you know, because it's, like, freedom and, like, the whole thing, and they all looked freaking amazing, and they looked, it was just, like, transporting you back to that time, and then there's the whole, like, Ryan Murphy show documenting the Gianni Versace movie or murder.
Video, right?
It's coming out soon. And I just felt like it was very...
God, I need to see that.
Penelope Cruz plays Donatella Versace.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, and so I'm just... Yeah, I just was obsessed with that moment. And
but didn't you feel like, where's Linda?
A bit, but I just felt like... It kind of made sense at the same time that she, that she wasn't there. I don't know if she's maybe as chummy with them,
right? I was talking about someone else, and they thought she probably felt too insecure or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or she's just not, like, out there as much. Like Cindy Crawford is.
So who
everywhere.
Was it? Cindy,
Carla Bruni, Cindy Crawford, Claudia Schiffer, Helena Christensen,
Naomi Campbell,
Campbell,
yeah. With those, like, slinky gold dresses and just, like, the long hair and all of that. It was just, like,
Claudia
very fun.
Claudia Schiffer is just, like, does the woman age?
All
like,
of them.
Yeah,
honestly.
Well, Naomi Campbell. Yeah. That's
I
just
know,
insane.
Naomi as well is just, like, never, ever, 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 ever ages.
And I actually, one other red carpet moment that I'm just going to add on to this was... Kate Hudson shaving off her beach waves.
Oh yeah.
That was pretty, I know it's for a movie, but that was pretty crazy because you would just, that's like a tat. I just feel like that's her. That's like her signature look.
Yeah.
That would be like Goldie getting rid of the bangs, you know? I just couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty.
And she could pull it off. Like she has a face where she can still look good without it.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
What else?
biggest beauty clapback moment?
Yeah, Lupita Nyong'o was on the cover of Grazia magazine in the UK, and they had photoshopped off her natural hair, and she very publicly called them out on that. She tweeted that she was super disappointed that they had felt the need to do that and make it more, as she said in her words, European-centric hair, right. suiting mm-hmm. a smoother standard. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that that was really wonderful that she has had the voice to do that and to put them in their place. And they apologized right away, obviously. Mm-hmm. And
which is just that's again, also just a dumbass move. Speaking of what the fuck moments, let's talk about the most WTF beauty trend that needs to stay in 2017.
Well, those fucking highlighters that just will not stop coming out, like, more insane, more, like, I just can't take if another one comes out, like, across my desk. Like, Kat Von D, it was so fucking
Metal Crush.
Insane. So insane. Like, who is gonna wear that?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then the other thing, although Susie thinks that these were a joke, was those squiggle eyebrows.
They were a joke. I'm pretty sure.
I felt like people were taking them seriously. But any of those weird eyebrows.
Like
things.
The feather ones. It's this makeup artist that I followed for a while. Her name's Stella. I forget what. She's like Eastern European. I forget also where she's located exactly. But it was a joke. Like she posted these like they looked like feathers, not feathered like Olsen twins, like eyebrows, like actual feathers. And it just exploded and it went viral and people were like, this is disgusting, how dare you? And then a few days later she, I guess, checked her phone and saw that she had gone viral and was like, this was a fucking joke, like chill the hell out. I don't know, I think those things are jokes. I think they're like kind of social social media experiments.
I guess it's so hard to tell, right, on Instagram. There's so much fucked up beauty shit on Instagram, so you're like, what is meant to be serious and what is a joke?
I know. Was there anything else for you, Susie?
For me, okay, so Lisa knows that I have a hard time saying no to like a look because I want people to be able to express themselves and like do what they want. However, if I never see someone highlight the very tip of their nose again, I won't be upset. It's just really, it's really jarring. And like seeing it in person is like, it looks like you ate a powdered donut.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, listen, I understand these things like photograph, like, I don't even want to say well, but like they look cool, like in Instagram, like when they're photographed. But I just don't think that. I understand highlighting the bridge of your nose, like because the light, it catches the light, but the very tip is just so much. It just,
it's
so
bizarre. Unblended. But also, I mean, it's the same thing with contour. Yeah. Like I'm occasionally. I remember last time I met up with you at Soho House, and it was just like, if I can see your contour from across the room, there's a problem.
Yeah. Yes.
And that happens.
Like, I love contouring.
In real life.
But it needs to be blended. Like, it's getting out of control.
Totally. My other moment, my what the fuck beauty moment to leave in 2017 is people doing YouTube videos applying foundation with condoms, iPhone cases, having their boyfriend do their makeup. Like
with his balls.
With his balls.
Yes. Oh my God.
Literally with his balls. Yeah. And I'm like, we have reached peak foundation application.
What are you talking about with his balls? There was it's a like a porno?
No.
No, this guy literally he fucking teabagged her with
what?
Foundation.
Like he used his balls as a beauty blender.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I hesitate to ask if they were hairless or not. I don't
That's
know
what I questioned. Did they shave them first?
Oh my God.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for taking the time.
Us.
This was really fun.
And everyone check out fashionmagazine.com.
Got me like a mummy. You can call me mummy. Lovey, even me, my mummy. Funny how we got so lucky.
Now that we've recapped 2017, the year in beauty, we're going to look ahead to 2018 and see what's coming next. We are happy to introduce our next guest. He's a cosmetic chemist based here in Toronto, also part-time in New York City, Stephen Coe. Welcome, Stephen.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm good.
Tell us a little bit about your profession. You are a cosmetic chemist. Mm-hmm. How long have you been at it, and how did you get into it?
So I've been doing this for, I guess, around 9 or 10 years. So I got into it sort of by chance when I started university for the second time. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. My parents were sort of pushing me into medicine. So I was doing a lot of chemistry. But at home and on the side, I was actually doing a lot of formulation of cosmetic products. So I was making shampoos, conditioners, skin lotions, that sort of thing. They weren't great, but it was something that I was definitely interested in. And then at some point, there was a business plan competition at my university. And I was like, you know, why don't I put together a line and enter it into that competition? So I did that. And through that, I met a business partner. And it just so happened that one of the judges was in the cosmetics industry. So through there, I kind of got pulled into the whole thing.
So I was wondering about, just sort of on the heels of that, you've probably worked on a lot of different cosmetic brands, but I imagine that's all pretty top secret, or what can you share on that front?
Sometimes it's top secret, sometimes it's just like, you know, the working conditions weren't great, mm-hmm. or like you weren't necessarily happy when you were working there, or there's just things that you're not very proud of. So I don't always do promo and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this industry sort of treats a lot of the technical people as tools. So your job as a cosmetic chemist is to make a formulation. You don't necessarily get any ownership of that. So product development usually comes from people in the marketing department. So it's like, you know, X ingredient is big. We want to make these claims. Mm. Can you do it? And then myself, I work on the bench, which is small scale.
Mm.
So you have another chemist who's usually an engineer, and they take your formulation and they scale it up to large scale production. So your piece in the company is actually quite small.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I talk to a lot of people who maybe aren't that familiar with the industry, they get this impression that like you're in this lab and like you're doing all this amazing stuff and you're playing and like doing all that stuff. But your free time is actually quite limited while you're working. So I know for some people that work at cosmetic brands, like most of their job is just expanding the color range of a product.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, like that can get a little bit boring.
Yeah. So can you tell us, I'm sure you do a lot of research on what's next and what's new.
Mm-hmm.
So looking into your crystal ball, can you tell us what you think some of the big trends are coming for 2018? You brought some pretty cool looking glimmers and glitters. Mm-hmm. Tell us about why you brought these and what you want to show us.
So a lot of trends are actually driven by what consumers want. So something that has been really big is sort of the removal of microplastics from our products. And that's definitely something that like came from A, research, and B, also consumers being like, well, we don't want to be contributing.
Mm-hmm.
So there have always been alternatives on the market. They just weren't necessarily the cheapest.
Mm.
But you do have brands now like switching to either biodegradable, quote unquote, plastics like polylactic acid,
mm-hmm.
Or they're using things like cellulose and fats essentially that replace mm-hmm. Plastic scrubs.
So are we talking about the actual packaging, or is this an element of the ingredient? Sorry.
It's both. So mm-hmm. So the body shop worked with a company that was using carbon that they siphoned from the air. So they essentially turned pollution into shampoo bottles.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's like, it's this really amazing technology, and you know, we'll hopefully start seeing that more mainstream. And then, you know, biodegradable plastic has reached a scale where like you can produce it on factory levels.
Mm.
So I think when the price point on that drops a bit, we'll start seeing it more, in our packaging. And now the conversation has sort of moved towards glitter.
Mm-hmm.
Cause what a lot of people don't know is that, a lot of the glitter substrate is actually just polyester.
Mm.
So when you're rinsing that off of the skin, when that's getting to the, you know, garbage or waterways, it's not being removed properly.
Mm. Well, we all know that when you put on glitter, it's impossible to get rid of to begin with.
Yeah.
I can only imagine in the environment.
Yeah, like there are different types of glitter. Like there's mica, which is just a sort of a mineral compound. But then you have like the larger glitters. It's more associated with craft glitter, but it does get used in cosmetics and like nail polish especially.
Mm-hmm.
And that is thought to be a contributor to microplastic pollution. So there are companies out there that are developing biodegradable versions of it.
Cool.
So I've brought one here, and you can see that it just looks like regular glitter.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I wouldn't have known anything different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're like, don't worry, guys, we'll show you on our Instagram. But yeah.
We're looking at sort of a, almost like a palette of little triangles with silver and green and gold and turquoise and purple and fuchsia, and there's a black there.
Basically, this thing is made for Kira Kira. It just wants to sparkle. It really does. It's really cool. So these are all biodegradable.
So I think they're 90% or 95% biodegradable. So they switch the polyester substrate for cellulose, and that will break down in heat and water. There are still some parts of it that don't biodegrade, but it's definitely like a step in the right direction.
I wonder how that'll wear on the skin differently. Like if it...
It should be the same because they're coated in the same pigments and glitter. Mm-hmm. It's just basically the sheet of plastic or paper that they're adhering the stuff onto. Mm-hmm. So it should function the same. In terms of like smoothness and the way that it feels on the skin, that's more to do with like the particle size.
Okay.
So they go down to, you know, like 5 micrometers. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty, it's not super fine, but like it gets down there. And you know, this is essentially a prototype, so it'll get better.
Do you think that we might see this in like the natural space or more mainstream brands? I'm just wondering, would this be like a ritual defeat type situation, or for, do you think we'll see it more from mainstream brands picking it up?
I think we'll probably first see it in indie brands. The reason for that is that they usually have quicker turnarounds in terms of their product, because they can formulate a product, produce it, and then start selling it on their website right away. Whereas if you're looking at like a big company, they have distribution deals that they need to work out. But you know, consumers don't want to be polluting. So if the demand's big enough, then I think we can start seeing companies switching.
What else is in your bag of tricks over there too?
Yeah.
I thought I heard some color changing action might be.
Yeah, so I brought a color changing eyeshadow.
Okay, let's have a look.
So these are pretty large glitters. And basically, when you rub them on your skin...
Mm-hmm. You're going to do a swatch, Carly?
Yeah, I'm doing a swatch. My skin's, like, rejecting.
So this one kind of goes... It goes from, like, purple to, like, a reddish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can really... It's pretty subtle. I think I brought the wrong ones, because they're ones that go from, like, blue to green.
And okay. They're, like, mermaid-y,
kind of. And basically what it is that it's kind of like these glitters. So they take the substrate, which is one color, and then they... in a sense, like, print on another color.
Right.
And then when you rub it, the color that's been printed on gets rubbed off so that they switch colors.
Okay.
Cool.
So this is actually in the Fenty, not this particular one, but, like, a similar technology is in the Fenty, I think it's their eyeliner.
So cool.
I know you're a little hesitant to talk about trends, but is there anything you're excited that might be coming down the pike in 2018 on the skincare front?
Not necessarily ingredients in particular, but I do like the trend of sunscreen becoming part of skincare. So as we all know, like, UV exposure is one of the biggest contributors to visible signs of aging. But as it is now, especially in the US and Canadian market, like, our sunscreens don't feel nice on the skin, or they don't provide enough UVA protection. So if you look at markets like Europe and Asia, they have a lot more elegant sunscreens, things that work under makeup, things that can function like makeup. And they're at much lower price points. So I'm hoping that's a trend that catches on over here, where we'll start seeing, you know, really good sunscreens that feel good on the skin and that have skincare benefits as well.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah,
thank
no
you. It's enlightening. I feel like, we got the crystal ball experience. So I'm excited.
Happy holidays, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Visit breakingbeauty.ca to sign up for our newsletter, and every episode will be delivered direct to your inbox so you won't miss a single thing.
And be sure to subscribe to us. There's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast fix.
And if you're up for it, show your love by writing a review in iTunes.